Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Crossland, Corsa and Mokka. Three good reasons to visit the Opel Open Road event.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, the Cabinet Subcommittee is meeting in the next hour. We'll have reaction to the proposed new restrictions as government considers NPHET recommendations this morning. Passengers arriving into the country were supposed to need a negative COVID test from midnight, but the whole system has been delayed. We'll be live at the airport shortly. Also, a year on from the death of her husband, former Justice Minister Nora Owen, on grieving and finding joy in the simple things. Eanani Launa talks to us about the animals worst affected by climate change, and another busy week to discuss in the Friday gathering today. You can text us this morning, 51551, email today cb@rte.ie, or on Twitter, we are at Today with Claire. Now, the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Holohan, has recommended in a letter given late last night to the Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, that there should be a limit on household gatherings and further restrictions for the hospitality sector. Cabinet will discuss those recommendations and decide whether to adopt them or not. Last Tuesday, we were told that anyone coming into the country would, from this morning, have to present an antigen or PCR test on arrival. But after 7 o'clock this morning, we heard that government has delayed the introduction of those tests until Sunday. And a senior government source said this would give more time to enable passengers and carriers to prepare for the measure. In a moment, our reporter Barry Lenehan will join us from Dublin Airport, where he's talking to people leaving and arriving into the country. But let's get the very latest now from Kevin Doyle, head of news at the Irish Independent. Kevin, in the last few minutes, it's been confirmed that the Cabinet Subcommittee is meeting. What do you expect to follow on from that meeting?
Yeah, things are moving incredibly quickly all of a sudden, Claire, because as recent as 8:30 this morning, I was told by officially that there would be no meeting today. There was no sense of emergency around any of this, and that things would continue on over the weekend, and it would possibly be next week before we had a cabinet meeting to sign off on whatever measures might be taken, as we saw in the case of the restrictions recently brought in relation to children. But in the last hour or so, there has been a serious ramping up, I think, of stress levels in government as word of this NPHET letter started to circulate more widely, and people got a sense of just the type of Christmas that Tony Holohan and his team are suggesting for the country. And I think there is a lot of concern now in government that they are going to end up, but maybe not by direction, but by default, closing down a lot of venues, events, and really reining the country back in, and then bringing back into people's houses again by reintroducing household restrictions, which we haven't had for several months.
What does that say about what's in this letter? Because up to now, we've heard that the restrictions on hospitality would mean no multiple table bookings, that there would be six per table only, maybe some shift in the closing hours, and then you'd have up to four households in a house for Christmas. Is there more to it, do you believe, now than that?
Well, I think it's the knock-on consequences is one of the big problems here, because if you measure those few things up, since we went back to working from home, I think it has been pretty obvious that the idea of the office Christmas party died along with that. So
yeah,
office Christmas parties are gone. But by reducing tables to six, you are killing off a lot of other activity within that now as well. You're going back to table service. So that is the end of that's basically back to no dancing again, which means a lot of clubs, a lot of venues that only got opened in the last few weeks shut again, and that is people losing their jobs again. So I think in government there is a sense they had managed to close off the pandemic unemployment payment. They thought they had moved on from that. There was a squeeze being put on the employment wage subsidy scheme. All those things have to be looked at again, and all those things come with a big financial cost. But then beyond that, there is some speculation around things like transport. Obviously, we're back at 100% capacity on trains and buses. Would that have to be brought back again to stop the movement of people, which is effectively what NPHET want? And I think probably what's causing most concern in government this morning is that having told people a couple of weeks ago that if they started to socialise less, that if they started to go back to the basics and mind themselves and everybody around them, that it wouldn't have to get much worse. But I think the picture this morning is being painted much worse. And it's interesting, Neil Varadkar, literally, as I'm speaking to you, Claire, tweeting about the hospital numbers today, which has 528 patients in COVID patients in hospital, the lowest in 25 days. And there was this sense in government that the surge had stalled. The numbers weren't coming down, but they had certainly stalled. And that now, despite that, we have to go again.
Mm-hmm. So what's he saying in that tweet? I'm just looking for it here. Is he just pointing out that it's the lowest in 25 days?
Yeah, he has retweeted somebody who has put up the stats for this morning with the hospitals, and it's pointing out that it is the lowest in 25 days, that it's at 528, and happy Friday, everybody. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to be a happy Friday.
So you're saying now that not only will government be considering these restrictions as proposed by NPHET, they'll also be considering things like the reintroduction of the PUP.
Yeah, I think they will do all they can to resist going back to the PUP. But there is a reality here that people could be losing their job for the third time in the mouth of Christmas. And so they won't want to go back to PUP. I think the emphasis will be more on supporting businesses to try and keep people on the books, to try and support wages and to come at it that way so that people are still technically employed, even if they're not working all the hours that they might have expected to over the coming weeks. But there's a lot to think about here, because this gets us to Christmas, but there's no guarantee that we come out the other side in January. We saw what happened last year. It took till March, really, before things started to come good again. It is really important to point out, we have 93% of people vaccinated, and that has to be factored in here as well. So I think the COVID pass will be another thing that becomes central to all these talks later in the day, and where could they be spread out to? The government resisted that a couple of weeks ago when it was talked about bringing them in for hairdressers and places like that. I suspect that resistance will fall away today.
Okay. On household visits, I know lots of people will be keen to hear about any proposed restrictions on what's going to happen around household visits. Just explain to us, Kevin, what you know on that.
Yeah, the suggestion at the minute is that we would go back, and we've had this before, that you could only have three other households in your house. So effectively, you and three others. And I suppose that in normal times, you might go, well, that's reasonable enough. It rules out house parties, but it doesn't stop you from having a couple of friends over for a cup of tea or a glass of wine. The difference here, I suppose, again, is the Christmas factor. And you have the reality that could place some families in the position where parents are looking and having to choose the favourite children again. If they have three or four children and a spate of grandchildren, that they have to go, am I really allowed to have the 15 or 20 people that they might expect on Christmas?
It's a really tricky one for government today, isn't it? Because we had been told on previous occasions that the reopening was happening slowly so that there would be no reversal. And look where we are.
Yeah, what NPHET are proposing, and even though the devil will be in the detail, it's pretty clear from talking to people around government this morning that it is a reversal. It's not a complete reversal, but we are going backwards. There's no doubt about that. And I think that is going to be very hard for the government to sell, because they said that wouldn't happen.
Okay, when are we going to know what the decision is? We have the subcommittee meeting at 11. What follows on from there?
Well, it's a little bit of a piece of string question, Claire, because half an hour ago we were being told there wouldn't be a cabinet subcommittee meeting, and now there is one at 11 o'clock. So we go from there. Usually how that works is that meeting is likely to go on, I would think, for quite some time. There will be health officials there to give their logic behind this and the reasoning behind what their recommendations are. There'll have to be considered around the economic impacts of that. And from there, it is possible that later this evening you could have a full cabinet meeting called, or it could go into the weekend if they decide that they're not ready to make a decision today.
All right, well, let's see what happens. Kevin, thank you very much for bringing us up to date on that. That's Kevin Doyle from the Irish Independent. Let's go to Dublin Airport now, where our reporter Barry Lenehan has been talking to people who are travelling in and out of the country today. Now, Barry, there was supposed to be a big rule change on COVID tests. It was supposed to come in from midnight. We heard about 7 o'clock this morning that it has been delayed. What have you been hearing there, Barry?
Yes, good morning, Claire, from a buzzing arrivals hall here in Dublin Airport. Aer Lingus flight EI1603 from Amsterdam, the latest to touch down on the tarmac here. And passengers on that flight, they're arriving to rules to regulations, which seem to be on again, off again, like a flickering flame this morning. We thought today would be the start of a new regime in terms of COVID testing for those arrival unvaccinated people, having to have a negative PCR test taken 72 hours before landing in Ireland, those vaccinated needing to obtain an antigen test within 48 hours of their before arriving here, and that antigen test having to be professionally administered, meaning at least around 35 to 40 euro to pay to a chemist or a doctor in order to take that test. That's what we thought would be welcoming here at Dublin Airport. Indeed, the Health Minister Stephen Donnelly in the Dáil last night reaffirming that move as well, reaffirming that that measure would be in place from today. But around a quarter past seven, as you say, well, it was scrapped. A pause was put in place for 48 hours. Those rules around COVID tests for those arriving in the country put off for another 48 hours. And as you could expect, the opposition swooping in pretty immediately, pointing to those familiar refrains we've heard throughout the pandemic of confusion, of a lack of communication. Senior government sources saying, hang on a second, we're trying to give passengers, we're trying to give airlines more time to prepare, more time to get used to it, to get ready for this new regime. But as anticipated, some people, well, they'd already forked out for their antigen tests, for their PCR tests, and those people, well, they were quite angry arriving here in the arrivals hall a little earlier, including a 21-woman hen party from West Yorkshire.
We had to get a COVID test. We got advance notice 2 days, which was ridiculous, and not one person has checked our COVID test. We've had to pay £30, and it's just a money rip-off.
Do you know why they didn't check? Is because the Irish government has announced in the last 5 minutes that they're suspending the requirement to get tested for the next 48 hours.
You have got to be kidding me. Hallelujah Island. But I'm not very happy. They've made about £100 million out of us, and this is ridiculous. And if I could speak... if I could speak to the Irish Prime Minister, I would tell him as well, thanks, mister, for nothing. There's 21 of us had to get an emergency test yesterday, and it was very stressful, and it could have put a dampener on the weekend, but it won't. But there's 21 of us at £30. Work that out.
Do you think that our £30 per person might be put over the bar in Temple Bar so we can all have a drink?
We got to Luton Airport and no one was interested. They only wanted to see that we've been vaccinated, so we've had to pay for tests that have been used.
So some pharmaceutical company somewhere has got made loads of money out of us for no reason whatsoever. So the communication around what we should and shouldn't be doing to arrive into Ireland is not clear at the moment.
But also, when I spoke to the lady at Luton, I was like, well, don't you need to see our antigen test? She didn't know anything about it.
The government just announced in the last half hour or so that they're suspending putting it in place for 48 hours.
Right,
yes.
So can we get a refund then?
Really,
and we'll get a refund.
So you didn't need to get a test at all?
No. So half a day out of work. I work for the NHS. I'd take some time off work to go and do my test. She left her Christmas party to do it. We're here today actually to go to a funeral. So we have the stress of, you know, getting ourselves organised and the pain and grief to deal with that. And on top of that, we've had to sort of negotiate, fill out 100 different... In fact, we didn't even look at that form we filled out, the location form.
Oh, very sorry to hear about your loss.
Thank you.
But actually, they passed away from COVID, so it just sends it
the message
home
clear,
to her. We need to get the jab.
Went to the United game.
And what do you think of the idea of getting a test before you go to see Man United, Arsenal, go out after?
Doesn't make any sense.
And what about the locator form? Were you checked on that?
No one actually either. Like, I don't know, is there a point doing it when no one's asking for them? Like.
I'm flying from Stansted. Had to get a PCR test to get into Ireland and all the COVID forms, etc. And it cost £100 each.
£100?
£100 each, yeah.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but the Irish government has just announced that there's no requirement to get a test
now. I did see that as I come over, and I thought, am I reading this right? But yeah, all about the money. Basically, me and my son paid £200 for a piece of A4 paper each.
£200, that's the sense in the arrivals hall, Barry. So what about the people who are leaving Ireland? Because Michael O'Leary criticised the new regime. He said it was gobbledygook earlier in the week. Were many of his passengers in agreement?
Well, questions around who's checking, obviously, in terms of the passenger locator form, airlines, sub-checking before you leave, sub not checking at all, questions around enforcement, and also what was it people saying they might end up like the Munster rugby team in South Africa and end up stranded coming back. Those were the concerns articulated to me in the departures hall this morning.
I'm not vaccinated either, so I don't really... I think it's weird like that they have everyone the same now because if they're vaccinated or not, like, so I don't know really, to be honest with you.
And where are you off to today?
Malaga, Marbella.
And is there a requirement for testing over there or a vaccine pass or what's the story?
Not over there, no. There's none at all over there. There's nothing about coronavirus or anything over there. So.
What about coming back now? You'll have to get a test back in.
You have to get a PCR test coming back, yeah. So I've been back and forth for the last couple of months, so I've been getting tested, like, coming back and going over. It's the only antigen test going over and then the PCR coming back into Ireland. So.
And as someone who is unvaccinated, what do you make of this measure in general?
I think they're just kind of caught everyone into believing things they can... I don't believe in it anyway. I won't be getting vaccinated anyway, so...
Where are you off to?
Off to London. It's money on the Joe Soap, the ordinary guy, isn't it? You know, where the government want to do that, really it should be free.
I got a PCR test yesterday. Now they just told me I'm going to have to get another one as soon as I land.
In Canada?
Yeah.
How long has the test requirement been in Canada?
Today. It started today.
Good thing, to be honest with you, to have the antigen test to come in, just to make sure things aren't coming back.
And where are you flying to this morning?
We're flying Doha and then on to Bangkok.
Some people think, you know, it's a lot of money. Michael O'Leary says it's gobbledygook.
Do we want to eradicate this or don't we? It's the way of life now. My girlfriend lives in the Philippines and I haven't seen her in 2 years because of COVID. This will be the first time I'll have seen her in 2 years, so...
We're off to Newcastle. There's a crowd of us. But we have a test booked for 12:10 tomorrow before we actually go to a game of 50,000 people. You know, it's unreal, like, and now we're flying back Sunday night.
Yeah, so cheek by jowl at St. James's Park, and that's after you take the test.
Yeah, exactly, James's Park, so...
We're flying back on Sunday evening. Like, who's to say you didn't catch something over the weekend, and then you're back in Ireland, you're not getting retested... It just doesn't make any sense at all.
And how much will it cost to get it in Newcastle?
£40 sterling, wow. Yeah, each. I just don't see the point of it. If they insisted that when we came back that we were tested again in 4 days' time and then in another 3 days' time. So you give the 10-day period or whatever that you're being tested, but they're not.
Like, we're mates for over the years. We've done it regularly, but we haven't done it in 2 years. And now it's kind of put a damper on it. We're leaving our families now and we're...
And what about your better halves? Was there any bit of apprehension there?
Absolutely, yeah, without a doubt.
Well, some of us run our own business.
Yeah, we can't do a 10-day isolation over in Newcastle, really. It'd be great if 10 of us were there for the crack, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Bit of a mess, really. Barry, thanks very much. Barry Lenehan there in Dublin Airport. We're getting emails on this morning to the programme. Sean says he's at Manchester Airport on our way home to Dublin for the weekend. We just got a text from Ryanair to say the PCR test we paid £138 for so we could travel is now not needed. Peed off is an understatement. Will the Irish government refund us this money? Asks Sean. Jerry has been in touch to say my wife and daughter are on a short trip to Sweden. They went into panic mode when they were told that a PCR test was required to return home. 2 days and €200 lighter, they're now told they don't need it. This farce has spoiled a long-awaited short Christmas break that they've been planning for 2 years. This government and NPHET are losing any bit of credibility, says Jerry, with farces like this. I, for one, will be taking their next piece of advice with a pinch of salt. Well, we're going to be talking about what that advice might be, because we know that government is meeting in about 40 minutes, the Cabinet Subcommittee, to consider the latest recommendations from NPHET, and we'll have more on the implications of that after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
And we're staying with the story of the recommendations made by the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony O'Houlihan, last night to government in relation to further restrictions for the hospitality sector. Gina Murphy is the owner of Hugo's Restaurant in Dublin. Gina, good morning.
Morning, Claire. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm interested to know how you are, because we heard firstly about the recommendations last night. I mean, what's it like for you reading them and realising what the implications might be?
Listen, it's unfathomable what we're going through at the moment. I mean, just in the last few weeks, Claire, I've received over 3,400 cancellations for the run-up to Christmas in itself. And that's just pure cancellations. That's not counting you know, tables that went from 8 down to 4 or 6 down to 2 or whatever. They're just pure individual cancellations. So we're left with, you know, we've taken a hit of about 70-75% of our business has already been wiped off the boards. And we're now looking at further restrictions, and I don't know how we'll all come out of this. That's the truth.
I just wonder, given what you said there about the cancellations, will further restrictions make much of a difference to you at this stage?
Well, depending on what they are. I mean, if they put a 10 o'clock closing on us, yes, it has a huge bearing on us on what's left. You know, my Friday, Saturday nights are still decent because they're friends and family nights. All the Christmas parties have been cancelled. All the businesses, lunches and dinners have been cancelled. And once they said work from home, you know, literally the midweek business just collapsed anyway. What we have left is just small tables. They're all twos and fours, a few sixes. Now, I think on my books, I have 10 groups of more than 10 left on my books for the whole month. So it's not really that. The problem is that the time limits, I think there has to be a realistic look at things. I mean, you don't mix with other people in restaurants. When you come into a restaurant, you're only seated with the people who are part of your group. Tables of six for us was extremely hard to stay viable. That's hand on heart. Mm-hmm. Very difficult.
We know the government will be looking at supports now. I mean, can you say that you're operating at a loss now? Is it a viable business right now in December?
No, it's not. Not right now. And it hasn't been since the cancellations came in. And while I know that they weren't, you know, directives from the government, but just saying the words, please restrict your social contacts, literally pulled the rug from underneath the hospitality business. From restaurants, bars, hotels, we've no bookings left. The only thing that people have left on their books, even in the hotels, are weddings. So, you know, there was the damage done to the business without any business supports to help us on the other hand.
So what do you need to hear today in terms of supports, Gina?
You know, I think the reality, I need to be people to respect the people of our industry. We need support to the business. If we're to close our businesses or if we're to operate literally hogtied, one hand behind our back, blindfolded, you know, we've got to be supported or else we won't be there when everybody wants us again. But I'm advocating for support for our staff. They've just been treated terribly through all of this. And like the reason that we have shortages in the industry right now is because people couldn't hang around. They could not live. You cannot live in Dublin on €350 a week, pay your mortgage, and feed your families. The average age of my staff, Claire, was 44. The average age on my floor was 49. These are career professionals. You cannot just ask these people to stay at home, not be allowed to work because we cannot work from home, and think that it's okay that these people can survive on €350. So if we're going to go into a situation where we go into that we're not allowed to trade property or that we're in lockdown, these people need to be respected and given a percentage of their take-home wage. They make far more than €350. Okay. And if they're not treated like that, we will not have an industry to open up because we won't have skilled staff.
Gina, thanks very much for talking to us and we wish you well at a difficult time. Stuart Quinn is frontman with the band Transmitter, which plays all sorts of events, including weddings. Stuart, good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Have you any gigs left at this stage?
I have 5 weddings left for the month of December.
Okay, and what would the month have been like for you?
22 gigs of various different types, like Christmas parties. This weekend would have been full of Christmas parties. We play schools, we would traditionally do a Christmas party for kind of our local schools. Concerts in ticketed venues, like Cabinet here locally, say, for example, we have a thing called the Christmas Cracker. It's all up in the air at the moment because of the messaging from the government.
We've heard a lot about how people's behaviour has been changing in recent weeks ahead of the rules changing and ahead of more restrictions as we expect now. Like, what are weddings like at the moment?
Weddings are actually very safe environments. I mean, the hotel industry has kind of gone above and beyond the call of duty in terms of kind of making them safe venues. And we've been saying it all along that essentially it's a bit of an anomaly event that everybody knows who's at the wedding. And what you'll probably have found that anybody over the age of 70 that had, you know, that had worries about COVID just wasn't going to go. And I think in terms of the responsibility, a personal responsibility, guests that weren't feeling very well would just cancel.
So you're seeing smaller weddings, and then the older people there, the over 70s, they're just not going to certainly the dancing bit.
Absolutely.
Are people leaving the industry?
In droves, and particularly actually it's the crew, the lighting people, the AV guys are being kind of hoovered up by IT companies at the moment. And you can't blame them because they're looking at kind of, we came off the PUP in September when the restrictions were lifted. Those people just didn't have the option of hanging around for that. And especially when you're like, as Gina was saying there, if you're dealing with a mortgage or high rents or anything like that, you have to be looking at the brass tacks of the situation. If you're operating on 300 or less a week on PUP and somebody comes in and offers you a five-figure salary or six-figure salary, you're just not even going to be, you know, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, you don't need to think about it too much. And when it comes to your own band, you've been on the go for how many years?
Well, we've been operating as Transmitter for the last 20 years and before that kind of on a semi-professional basis for the previous 10 years before that.
What do you think the outlook is now?
It's kind of bleak as it stands at the moment, because I mean, I challenged our local TDs here to go into any restaurant, any pub, hotel, ticketed venue this weekend. It's the traditional start of the festive season, and look around. Your eyes don't lie. I called it a lockdown by stealth, and that's what I still stand over. That's essentially what this is. Because of the messaging that's been given out, it's destroyed confidence in the industry, and as a result, people are feeling guilt-tripped into not attending Christmas events. And what ends up happening is that the knock-on effect of that is that you have upwards of 150,000 people's livelihoods being affected, whether it's in music, entertainment, hospitality, and there's a tsunami coming down the road. That's the truth of it if the supports aren't put in place. And the government have already been handed this by the entertainment industry. They've been handed a plan B, and they just seem to put their head in the sand. They don't want to approach what if plan A doesn't work. Plan A has not worked.
Stuart, thanks very much for talking to us. And again, we wish you well, because it's a really, really tricky time. Stuart Quinn, frontman with the band Transmitter. Coming up next, a year on from the death of her husband, the former Justice Minister Nora Owen, on grieving and finding joy in the simple things.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Vivian, thank you very much indeed. I see Mary Regan in the newsroom reporting that a meeting of the full cabinet has been scheduled now for 3 o'clock this afternoon. Ministers will meet in person to consider the latest advice from NPHET. And more on that now, because a meeting was held this morning with the Taoiseach Micheál Martin and the Public Expenditure Minister Michael McGrand, representatives of the hospitality sector. That meeting has just wrapped up in the last little while. Adrian Cummins, who's Chief Executive of the Restaurant Association of Ireland, was at the meeting and joins us on the line now. So Adrian, and what did they say to you?
Good morning, Claire. Well, we had a very constructive, robust meeting with the Taoiseach and the Minister for Public Expenditure, Michael McGrath. We did set out our concerns around the precarious position where hospitality is now, mass cancellations across our industry due to public health advice and public listening to the advice. We have always said we will adhere to public advice right through the pandemic. We're now saying to the government, when the budget was announced in October, we were due to open fully on the 22nd of October. We're in a different position now, so the business supports need to be reinstated at 100%. They dropped by 42% on Wednesday for the EWS scheme, that's the wage supplement scheme. We spoke about the CRSP payment, which is the COVID support scheme to cover overheads, and a commercial rates waiver as well, plus a long-term strategy for the hospitality industry to work within COVID in the future.
Did you call for the PUP to be reinstated, to be reopened to new entrants?
Well, we said very clearly to the government around that keep our teams together, keep the staff in place, pay the employers to keep these staff in place. But we need to make sure that EWS scheme is put back to the 100%.
Okay.
Otherwise, people will go off the EWS and go on to the live register if these businesses are not kept into a viable manner and fashion.
Did you get a sense that the Taoiseach and the Minister accepted that your business has been hit with a sledgehammer?
Absolutely. There was it was a very constructive meeting. The Taoiseach and the Minister for Public Expenditure has heard it on the ground from business owners in their own constituency. Have said them very clearly, look at our books, look at the cancellations that we're experiencing now. the government is very clear that we will support the hospitality industry. The details have to be teased out over the next number of days. Obviously, there's issues are moving at pace at the cabinet, subcommittee, cabinet, and never decision later on today. So we need to see what happens there. But from the financial perspective, we believe that the government will support us. We need to look what is the level of support now the government will give to our industry. And that's where we need to work with government around this.
Adrian, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Adrian Cummins there from the Restaurants Association of Ireland. And on those new restrictions, government is considering them today, as we know, at that full cabinet meeting later on this afternoon. NPHET, we believe, has recommended a limit to be placed on household gatherings, further restrictions on the hospitality sector. And this includes table service, a ban on multiple table bookings, 6 people only per table, and there will be further limits, it would seem, on opening times. The Taoiseach has said government will provide extra supports if the further restrictions are imposed. And I'm joined now by Danny McCoy, the CEO of the business representative group, IBEC. Good morning to you, Danny.
Good morning, Claire.
So what financial measures do they need to bring in if they adopt these restrictions?
Well, I think the difference from previous times that we've learnt from COVID over the last number of whiles is that the economy is performing very strongly, but there are certain sectors which Adrian represents in the restaurants, the publicans, but also wider into the supply chain that are going to be impacted by this reduced demand. Because this time around, what we're seeing is the tactic here is to actually keep things open, to keep the supply side intact, but try to reduce demand. And I think everybody realizes that we need some demand suppression to take control of this. Although I must say it is surprising, given the stabilization that's occurring right across in the cases in terms of hospitalization and ICU, that we're going for further restrictions, and that needs to be, kept monitored throughout all of this, that we will find on this occasion we're going to need to have some sensitivity for reduced demand as opposed to outright closures.
Are you saying that the hospital figures that you're seeing today, Danny, you're saying that you read that as saying we don't need restrictions now?
No, I'm just saying that we need to be prudent, but again, this kind of, we don't need a panic reaction here because the economy is strong. People are actually reacting and reducing their demand and footfall. Offices, and I know this, offices have been withdrawn over the last number of weeks, and we're starting to see that come true. So there's still uncertainty, obviously. But creating the conditions now is that we want to do this sensibly and realise that there will be industries impacted by the demand going down, and that the measures we put in place before were for full closures. We need to start to see that the resources are put for where people are experiencing demand fall. The experience economy is much wider than just restaurants or pubs. And people have been getting, been gearing back up, training their staff. It's important now to keep those staff attached to the business. And that's why I think the EWIS, the Employer Wage Subsidy Scheme, may need some tweaks in it, but also the CRIS scheme, which was really for when you were closed down fully, might need to be adapted to reflect the new realities now.
Okay, what about reopening the pub?
I think that, look, the pub should be wound down, but obviously around this time of the year, that if there are people who aren't connected to their employer, that's what the EWIS would do. If they aren't connected, then I'm sure there is a case for not putting people fully onto the dole for a very short period of time just through this phase. But ultimately, the pub was put in place for a different time and has had a huge disincentive effect in getting people back to work as people were gearing up. So, if it needs to be in an emergency response for a short space of time, I'm sure that's perfectly acceptable, but it can't be left in place because it is a drag on the labour market.
When people like me ask the Finance Minister about all of this, about increasing supports and extending them, he outlines how much the state has spent on COVID supports. That's the first thing that he says. And he makes the point, even this week, that the financial supports cannot go on forever. Do you accept that point?
Well, the point, it's a fairly moot point to say forever, but it can go on in the short term. We've just seen the public finance numbers from yesterday, which really show the economy is probably growing somewhere near 20% this year. The public finances across the mix from yesterday's numbers on different items are up about 25%. It isn't from the lack of money in our society or in government's coffers at the moment that we should be contemplating this. There just needs to be appropriate response, both on the public health advice and on the response from government. This is not in the kind of hysteria place that we were a year and a half ago. We need to be sensible before we ratchet ourselves back up into a really bad position. if we work together here, I think we can keep lots of things open, suppress demand and compensate those who are most impacted in the experience economy.
Danny McCoy from IBEC, thank you for joining us. Coming up next, Evelyn is reporting from two primary schools about how they're coping with the fourth wave.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.